Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Somebody please think of the children!
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly mini-sode where we dig into things that we've been watching. I think just watching, maybe reading. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm Terry. Hi.
I'm Mary Beth. One reading thing. I'm back from Japan. Very exciting.
Yes.
This week we're chatting about feeding sewer boys like a mama bird. Okay. A new sci-fi anime, Life on Mars, terrifying wooden dolls, a pulpy adventure with monsters, another anime, and just the beautiful cherry on top is Dracula as a twonk.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have some stuff. When being in Japan, we didn't watch a lot. We did watch a lot of TV, or streamed a lot of TV, or whatever. But I'm excited to be back, everybody. I know it felt like a long time.
It really did. It's felt like forever. I mean, it's been kind of a nice break, I'm going to be perfectly honest, because it's like, we were both like doing stuff. You were on vacation and then I went to New York. So it was like, It just felt like a perfect lineup of things. And
yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of nice.
It was nice.
But yeah, I miss this.
I do too. I just missed you.
I miss you too.
Fortunately, our time differences are crazy.
I know.
But we're back.
The amount of times I had to Google what time is it in Japan so that I'd be like, am I texting her super early or super late?
And my body is still where I got back on Saturday. And so I am still adjusting. And jet lag there wasn't bad, but jet lag coming back has been a bitch. My body just decides randomly, it's like, no, you're exhausted, like, help. And like, no amount of energy drinks or coffee, like, I don't drink energy drinks. I have been drinking Monster this week to like try on top of my coffee. It's not working. But it's okay, we're soldiering through. And listeners, I'll probably pepper in stories about Japan throughout the next couple of weeks, and you'll see pictures and stuff. It's hard to like debrief because there's just so many things.
So much.
But a lot of the things, all the things I'm talking about, we watched or was read in Japan. So we'll talk a little bit. But just real quick before we jump in, I just want to say there's a lot of really fucked up shit going on right now, to put it in like the most basic terms possible, and I'm in reference to what's going on in Palestine and Gaza. So I know that it feels very hopeless right now, and it feels like there's nothing we can do, but there are resources. Please go to ceasefiretoday.com, and you'll find ways to email your congressperson, your senators, your house, your representatives in the House, find petitions to sign, toolkits, protest near you if you're able to, and places to donate if you're so inclined. Donations are weird right now because I'm not sure how people are getting money, but there are some things you can do from your home if you're comfortable, because right now it's not a time to stay silent. Use your voice if you can. It's helping, so you know, do what you can, and yeah, ceasefire now. I know we're a horror podcast, but we have a small platform. It's time for our people just to say stuff. So, anyway, on that note, this is the worst transition of all time, everybody. Get ready. Sewer boys being fed like a mama bird. There was no way.
There's no way to do that.
It's just no way. But
I mean,
yeah,
there's no way to do that, like, with a normal, like, off the top of the episode to transition to sewer boys and mama birds. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But what the fuck?
Sorry, everyone. But hey. Yeah, what the fuck?
But what the fuck is a thought that I had plenty of times while watching this. Now, granted, I watched this Monday night as I was laying in bed on Ambien after coming back from New York. And I was like, this sounds like a fun thing to put on and just sort of fall asleep to. And this Feeding Superboys Like a Mama Bird, I put this in the dock as I was watching the movie. I was like, I got to remember.
Oh,
I'm not going to remember
Ambien
this.
Terry.
So this is an Ambien Terry note.
Aww.
So I finally watched Dick's the Musical.
Oh, interesting description of. Okay, tell me more about this.
So this is the infamous, I think, potentially, Larry Charles directed musical based on a off-Broadway, I think, musical written by Josh Sharp and Aaron Jackson. I believe, I'm trying to remember what the musical is actually called because it's not called Dick's. But I understand. Yeah. So the musical is called Fucking Identical Twins, the Musical. So obviously A24 is going to change it to Dick's the Musical.
Cowards.
Yeah. But
coward
this is
behavior.
This is a musical about, I don't even know. There's identical twins and they're not identical. Obviously, it's played by Aaron Jackson and Josh Sharp. They're not identical. They're not related to each other, but they are identical twins. And everyone talks about how much they look alike. God is played by Bowen Yang. And he tells
cool.
us in the beginning to just right. And he tells us in the beginning to just go with it. And so they are identical twins separated at some point in their early childhood and don't realize the other person exists.
Oh, classic.
Yes, because their parents divorced, and one kept one kid, the other kept the other kid.
Oh, so it's like Parent Trap, but...
It is Parent Trap.
Deeply inappropriate.
Oh, this movie. This movie's just like, it hits that line and then just keeps going. And so, yes, they do decide as grown adults who discover that they work at the same place and are both the top salespeople and sing a song about how they're the best thing ever. Their boss is played by Megan Thee Stallion.
Oh, okay. Because I know she's in it. And yeah. I was very excited about
that. And she has this hilarious song about where she's like leading men around on leashes as if they're dogs. Like it.
Yes, I saw clips of that and I was like, maybe I do need to watch this movie.
Oh, you do need to watch this movie. I would say to get blitzed and watch this movie, because I'll tell you, watching it on Ambien was a trip. And I don't want to spoil all of the audaciousness that this movie goes into, so I will focus on the sewer boys. So yes, this is basically Parent Trap, where the two as adults decide that they missed having a real, and I'm using that in quotations because that's something that they say, and it's actually a song point about them not having a real family because they're from single parent family homes. Like, this is, they're, the things that they talk about here is very much like, it is pushing some boundaries. And so they decide to get their parents together, and their parents are played by Nathan Lane and Megan Mullally.
Okay, great. That's a great, you know what? I'm surprised that duo hasn't happened earlier, honestly. Like, that really is such a great pairing.
Yeah.
Of chaos, and it sounds like, just knowing them.
The chaos is ridiculous. I'm not even going to talk about Megan Mullally's character. I just want to focus on Nathan Lane. So the kids end up swapping and going to their different parents, and they have like completely different haircuts. Like Trevor, played by Aaron Jackson, has long hair, and Josh's Craig is very short. And so
okay,
they end up getting
wigs. So we're definitely
wigs.
Playing with that entire sight gag of like, you're
yes.
Okay.
Yes. Respect. And everyone talks okay. about how it's so weird to see you with hair that looks this shitty. Because they're wearing like
fuck,
horrible
yeah.
wigs. But okay, so one of them goes to Nathan Lane's house, and Nathan Lane comes out as gay to him, and then he reveals that he has a pair of small creatures that he calls the sewer boys, and they are in a cage in his apartment, and he doesn't leave his apartment, and he doesn't need to because he spends time with the sewer boys. And at one point, he's like, "Oh, it's feeding time," and so he
stop it right now. I'm gonna.
He takes a bag of, like, I think it's ham. I can't honestly remember, and literally is chewing it up, and then spitting it into their faces. Like, this is the beginning step of how ridiculous this movie gets, and it only gets more ridiculous and more irreverent past that point. And that is literally why I sat here and I was like, I gotta write this down because otherwise Ambientary is gonna forget. And so I had to put it in the doc because this movie should not exist, and yet it does. And I absolutely loved it. I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say about it. Everyone should go watch it. Get high, take some Ambien, do something, and watch this movie because it is audacious in a way
that... I was, like, not super excited about it, but now I am. Like, I had nothing against it, but I was just like, I don't dislike musicals, but they are not my first choice.
Same.
And, okay. Good to know.
It's very funny. The music is actually very, very funny, I will say.
All right. Is that out now?
Yeah, it's out now on VOD. It came out on Friday, last Friday.
See, I feel like I was gone for 20 years. I feel like all these... I've only gone for 2 weeks, but I feel like that's like 30 years in like entertainment journalism time. I'm like, I've missed an entire era of movies. I feel like, uh-huh. You know what I mean? I'm like, I've missed everything. Like,
yeah.
I didn't get to go to a couple screenings and I feel like I'm behind. I'm like, this industry. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm telling you, Dick's the Musical. Okay. I don't even know. Yeah, right. I don't even know what they were smoking when they wrote this, I'm here for it.
I love that. I don't listen to Les Culturistas, which is Bo and Yang's podcast, but I saw clips of the two guys on the podcast on TikTok and it looks incredible. So it was chaos. It looks like the clips were just like gay chaos.
I mean, yeah, and this movie is very queer, and there's a little funny aside in the very beginning that it is literally two gay men playing two straight men. How brave. It's a delight. So I definitely, cool. Like, this isn't a good movie. This is a wild-ass movie that you will not forget. Oh,
yeah. No, I want that. I need it. I need that. I don't need something... Yeah, I want something weird and goofy and, like, fun.
You're gonna get fucking weird. I really want to spoil Megan Mullally's bit, but I'm not going to.
No, because now I actually really want to see it.
I can't say how much I actually really enjoyed this movie, but let's talk about a new sci-fi anime.
All right, so I have a bone to pick with Netflix, because Netflix is burying perhaps one of the best things they've put out all year, and... It's a fucking travesty. I haven't seen shit about it, except in Japan. But it's in the US. This is Pluto. That came out... it came out right before I left. So it came out at the end of October. And so this Pluto is based on a manga, which is based on Astro Boy. So...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... Osamu Tezuka created Astro Boy in the 60s. We've all know, like, Astro Boy, little, you know, robot boy. Mm-hmm. And this is one of, like, the first manga. Osamu Tezuka, like, was inspired by Disney and basically shaped what Japanese manga looked like starting in the 60s. There is an arc called The Greatest Boy on Earth where a... robot named Pluto is created to fight and destroy the seven strongest robots in the world. And so Pluto is an adaptation of that, but in a much more serious manner. And it's much more of like a noir robot detective story. And so we haven't finished it yet because it's really sad. And we didn't want to like watch the last two sad episodes while we were in Japan, because the first episode, we watched it when we were in Kyoto and I cried because it was so good. But like it's basically, it takes place in a world where robots have basically earned human status. There's robot rights, like robots are not, are programmed to not kill people, but they're so advanced that they need, that they're being integrated into society like human beings. But of course, people don't, there are people who don't like that. Right. And there is someone who is going around assassinating the 7 most powerful robots on the planet that were all created to be these weapons of mass destruction, as well as human beings who advocated for robot rights in some way. And wow. What's really a big kicker is that while this takes place, like, not like on a different version of Earth, there's a lot going on talking about the Middle East and how wars in the Middle East have created people who have created people who perhaps have good intentions but are going about them in violent ways in terms of getting revenge on slaughter. And it's incredibly prescient to what is going on now in a way that I was not expecting in terms of how they grapple with, like, identity and roles in wars and what it means to participate in a war and to commit slaughter. And how perhaps when there are bad people being targeted, it's not just out of selfishness, but out of, like, a desperate grappling for, like, people to realize atrocities that have been committed. So it's one of these shows that proves that animation is such a fucking incredibly serious medium that needs to be taken seriously. And that these right. conversations are not just about, like, robots, but about, like, human nature and empathy and what it means to be a person. Like, I had, this show made me cry about a robot I met for, like, maybe 25 minutes on the show. Like, aww. It's so well done in terms of how it creates empathy for characters and how it gets you into this, like, this world of, and it's, like, very expansive. Like, it's, like, it's not just taking place in one part of the world. It's, like, international. And it's so well done, incredibly well written, incredibly well animated and voice acted. Netflix is not talking about it nearly enough. Like, this is, this should be, like, being shot up from the rooftops for how good this show is. Like, Keith David has a voice as Tenma, who is the creator of that. Adam, who is Adam. Adam is Astro. Adam in this. So Astro Boy isn't in, is technically in this, but it's Adam. He doesn't look, he's got, like, Astro Boy style hair, but he doesn't look like Astro Boy. So again, like, this is taking the idea from Astro Boy, making it a little bit more serious and a little less, like, cartoony, and making the stakes much higher. But it follows Gizikt, who is a Europol robot, who is one of the most powerful robots on the planet, and he is investigating and trying to protect all these robots before they're killed and trying to figure out who Pluto is and why Pluto is doing what he is doing. It's really fucking good. And it's like I said, it's sad. But I think this needs way more attention for what it is. It's beautiful.
I just added it to my Netflix list.
It's 8 hour long episodes.
And I was going to say, it looked like it's an hour it's long. Yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel long. And there's so much going on that they need that length. I don't want to spoil too much because it's just really good. So even if you don't love anime, like, this is not an anime ass, it's an anime ass anime, but, like, not in the way you expect. It's very it's like a noir. It's real good.
I love the idea of that. Yeah. Boy,
you want to feel a lot of emotions watch Pluto. So Pluto is on Netflix. All 8 episodes are on Netflix. Give it a try. It's hard to binge. I will say it is not an easy show to watch back to back to back because of how much is going on. Right. But that just means you get to enjoy it even longer. So yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Speaking of sci-fi, Life on Mars.
Yeah. So it's funny that you talk about Pluto being kind of prescient with what's going on, because what I was realizing as I was watching this latest show is how much a lot of stuff that we have been watching recently feels almost as if they predicted where things are going to be when they're being released. Like, we talked about the mill with, like, capitalism run amok, and there's a little bit of, like, there's talks about striking in that as well. Well, for this one, The new season of For All Mankind, the fourth season, started on Apple TV last Friday. And I've talked about this on the show if you followed along, but in case you are new to it, I'm just going to give you a very brief synopsis. For All Mankind is a decade-spanning show that asks the question, what if America did not get to the moon first? What if the Russians did? And the space race never ended. And so because of that, every single season is set in a decade, and we are seeing different decades of the space race. Well, season four, like in the very beginning, they're trying to get to the moon, then they're trying to establish a base on the moon, then they're trying to use that as a piggyback to get to Mars. In season four, we are caught up to the early 2000s, and we have a colony on Mars of scientists and workers who are keeping everything going. And without getting into much spoilers, the big thing this season is that there is this asteroid that is going to be passing through our galaxy that in 6 months that they want to try to mine from. Like mining on this asteroid that is worth trillions of dollars in minerals and ores and that kind of stuff. They want to catch it and bring it to Mars to mine. So this is going on, and we're following some similar characters that have continued from throughout the entire series. And I think that's one of the things that I really love about this is that we are now like 50 years almost from when the show started, and we are seeing these characters progress through the years, and we're seeing things that have like been building for decades come to head to head, and there's some really emotional resolutions in this season.
Is it the last season?
I don't know. They haven't announced a new one yet, and they only gave us 7 episodes to screen out of 10, so I don't know how it's going to end. But I sat and I binged this the weekend before I went to New York because it's so good. And the thing that one of the sub stories this season. So you have on Mars the astronauts and the scientists, and then you have the people that are keeping the place working, that are working on the HVAC, that are working basically blue-collar jobs, and their life is not great. And we're following a new character as he is... He worked on rigs on Earth, but then with the advent of going to Mars, those rigs became useless, and so he was out of a job and has displaced a whole lot of people. And now they are taking a two-year tour to Mars to work after being promised a lot of money. So they get to Mars and they realize that unlike the people that are white collar, they don't have as good of internet. So their video calls don't always go through. They're being fed mush. They don't even get like recognized by the rock star scientists.
Have you seen The Expanse? Have you watched The Expanse?
I've seen like the first, I think, 2 or 3 seasons of that.
Okay, parallels are happening, because again, Expanse is like much in the future, but it sounds like this is kind of like, it's bridging the gap a little bit in my head of like how we got to what happens in The Expanse, and this is like when that starts in terms of like, oh cool, this is how we start marginalizing people in space.
Uh-huh, yes, and again, this was created by Ronald Moore, who did the Battlestar Galactica reboot in the early 2000s.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of like that DNA that of things that he was using sci-fi to explore is in this. And so at one point we're going into a strike here on Mars. And the interesting thing is like, you know, that's like a 30, I think at the time of this show, it's like a 30-day trip now to get there. And so, like, if people strike, it's not as if you can just replace them. There's no one to do it. You know what I mean? So, like, we have that going on there as well as...
Ha-ha, got you, bitch. You can't use that stupid we'll just find other people. Ha-ha.
Exactly. Especially when you consider that there is the approaching asteroid within 6 months that they need to figure out how to capture.
Oh, yeah, you know. Just one of those.
Yeah. So I think this show is fantastic. I think it is being slept on. I don't think enough people are watching it and talking about it. So I just wanted to kind of champion this fourth season because it's doing some really interesting things.
Fuck yeah. Okay. Fine. Fucking okay. Fine. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Is that Apple TV? It's Apple TV, right?
Apple TV.
Okay. Apple TV really be killing it. I really feel like they to watch Fingernails. I haven't watched Fingernails yet, but they really are putting out some like really good stuff.
They really are. I honestly, what they're doing right now reminds me of like the golden age of HBO back in like when they were putting out like very high pedigree stuff and putting a lot of effort into the budget and stuff, because this is an expensive show and it looks gorgeous.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, this is not like space shows are not cheap. That's why The Expanse kept jumping around to networks, because
it all right, let's go away from sci-fi, and I want to hear about terrifying wooden dolls.
All right, so I did some reading on the plane. I had very long plane rides to and from Japan, and I needed things to do with myself.
How long of a flight was it again?
So to Japan, it was 14 and a half hours, and then we landed in Tokyo, and then we had to take another flight to Osaka. So it was like 17 hours travel total. And then, but like the 14 hours nonstop was a nightmare, because the flight back, it was 10 hours and we had a layover in Denver. So it was a little bit more broken up, but that flight sucked shit, because the last leg of it, one, I was exhausted and was like, give me the fuck home. And then two, babies were crying the whole flight. And thankfully it was only like a 3 hour flight, but still. So on the way home, I binge watched Top Chef because it was on. It was like one of those things like, oh, binge watching something will help. So I binge watched things and played my Nintendo Switch. But on the way there, I read a couple books. And the one I really wanted to shout out that I haven't finished yet, but I was reading it while I was in Japan, is called The Silent Companions by Laura Purcell. And it's a Victorian gothic horror that got my attention. Very much. Yeah, which is, it's very much like playing with the tropes of like a young widow discovers something weird about like her deceased husband. And when this woman, Elsie, married a handsome wealthy man. His name was Rupert Bainbridge, and he basically came in and bought/funded the match factory that is in her family, and she married him. And it was one of these things where, like, oh, it was like a marriage of convenience/business, but they actually ended up falling in love with each other. But he happens to die right after they get married, and right after she's pregnant. And everyone's like, you murdered him. And she's like, no, I didn't. And it's going back and forth in time. So it starts after all of the events of the book, and then she's retelling them, but then also going further back in history as things go on. So we're doing like multiple layers of time here that's are delineated in like the chapters. But essentially, Elsie arrives at the Bainbridge house in the middle of nowhere, England. It's nasty, it's cold, everyone's scared of the house, and she's just like, oh fuck, what am I gonna do? Then they discover these strange, they're not really dolls, but they're like, basically, you know, like life-size cutouts of celebrities that people have for whatever fucking reason. They're versions of that, but they're of people they don't know, and they're wood. And they seem to just move on their own.
Nope.
And I won't go much, I haven't finished it yet, but I also, like, there's a lot of really interesting twists and turns it makes, and it's a lot of really interesting examinations of, like, gender in Victorian era England, and also, like, going deeper into just, like, the power dynamics and how women are like, I know what I have to do to, like, make myself a part of society, and, like, I'm fighting for my life here on top of some crazy supernatural shit going on. And it was a really good, like, it's a really good, compelling read. The only reason I didn't finish it is because my brain was exhausted just from my trip. But, like,
I don't know why.
Yeah, like, one morning Steve was sleeping in and I couldn't sleep because of jet lag. So I, like, sat on the balcony in our hotel and, like, read a bunch of it. It's really well done. And if you like Victorian horror, but, like, updated, I guess, you would love this. Very much, you know, like, creepy castles and stuff, but also like some really interesting gender things happening. And again, I haven't finished it, but I know it gets even creepier, so I'm very excited. It's one of these books where I'm keep trying to guess what's going on, but then something comes up where it's like, no, you're wrong, and I'm like, well, okay, cool. I love that though, but I like that because it's like,
me too,
it's nice to be like, oh no, like you think that's where it's going, but actually it's not. That's The Silent Companions by Laura Purcell.
I am adding it to my list right now.
Yeah, it was like one of these books that's been recommended on Book Talk a bunch, and it was worth the hype so far.
Hell yeah.
So I'm reading it on my Kindle. Sweet. All right, A Pulpy Adventure with Monsters.
Yes. Going back to sci-fi briefly. So this is Monarch Legacy of Monsters.
I haven't watched that yet.
I won't go into any spoilers, really. But it is...
Godzilla!
I really wish people could see the Shin Godzilla baby. What it is?
Yeah, it's like I think the second, like, the larval formation of Shin Godzilla. My little baby boy. Anyway.
So cute. For those who aren't aware, they've been building, like, this monsterverse, right? With, like, King Kong and Godzilla and making these big movies out of it, right? And so one of the organizations that has been kind of whispered about is Monarch. And so Monarch Legacy Monsters does what I think is better than any of the Disney Plus cinematic, you know, things that they've been kind of doing with their Disney Plus series by taking a small kind of throwaway thing about Monarch and exploring it. So this thing really does help add complexity to the movies, but it doesn't feel necessary. Like, it doesn't feel like if you miss this, you're going to, like, miss out on a movie. You know what I mean? As opposed to, like...
piece? It takes place in the 60s? So
it's decade spanning. So it's set...
Oh, decades. Okay.
Yeah, so it's set in a couple different time periods, specifically with the formation of Monarch, where we have a young Lee Shaw, played by, in the past, Wyatt Russell, and then in the present, Kurt Russell, his father. So, really kind of cool. So we have, like, him as a kid, well, as, like, a young adult meeting with... a couple other people, one of which I believe becomes John Goodman's character.
Yeah, from Kong Skull Island.
Right, because we see John Goodman
see,
very briefly.
This is a cinematic universe that I'm very well versed in. This is one I'm like, oh yeah, no.
Because he shows up at the very beginning and he throws something off of Kong Island, and then it's sort of like a MacGuffin that, like, we follow into today. And so we're split with the formation of Monarch, and then we're also following a woman from San Francisco who was there in San Francisco when G-Day happened, when Godzilla from Gareth Evans' Godzilla movie happened. She was there. She saw the devastation. Her father has gone missing and is presumed dead, and she goes back to Japan because she has this key and she has information about him. Well, the key opens up an apartment that she ends up finding out her father had two families, one that lived in America and one that lived in Japan. And her half-brother is there in Japan, and he doesn't know what happened to this father. And so we're following the half-brother and half-sister and his kind of lovey interest, maybe not, played by Kiersey Clemons. And so we're following them on sort of like a globetrotting experience to find traces of their father, find out if he did die. They run into an older Lee Shaw, played by Kurt Russell, and they catch the eye of Monarch, and Monarch is after them for reasons they're not sure of, while they're also trying to figure out what happened to their father and why he has lied and kept two families. Along the way, there's a bunch of monsters. We get some Godzilla. We get some other creatures. We get some big things. But unlike the movies, which I know a lot of people have complained about, this is more of a focus on the people. And they don't feel like just sort of stand-ins while we're waiting for the big...
Is it actually well done with that? Because it's hard in a Godzilla or like in a kaiju movie to do that. But if it's a TV show, that actually makes sense.
Right, exactly. And I think that's one of the benefits here is that while there are some big set pieces and there are some large monsters, a lot of it is on this focus on this family unit that is trying to figure out what happened. And I do think some of the narrative plotting is a little bit finicky to get people moving to different places, and there's a lot of backstabbing and double crossing going on throughout it, but it just feeds into like this pulpy adventure that reminds me of like the 30s, like the pulpy kind of style 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, adventure movie. And this has so many different locations, literally going across the globe. And it just, I don't know, set between different time periods. It's very fast. It's very breezy. It's an easy show to binge. I think I was given the first 7 episodes and I pretty much watched them back to back to back because it just books. I'm really enjoying it. And that is also out on Apple TV. I don't know why Apple TV is putting 2 of their big sci-fi releases like at the same time, because For All Mankind started last week. As of the episode dropping today, Monarch is starting on Apple TV. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Give some time to breathe. But they're both really killing it.
I mean, I love that they go the pulpy route, because have you seen Kong Skull Island?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that one, I feel like the Kong movies have done a good job going that pulpy route. And to the extent that I like the Godzilla movies, but like they're a little bit more like melodramatic in the present. Mm-hmm. But as if you've watched like Godzilla, so much of that shit is so pulpy and kind of silly. So yeah. I'm excited to see it and kind of see how they lean into that, because it is hard for, I do think it's harder for American adaptations of Godzilla stuff to like really hit the right tone.
Right.
So, and I know that this is like a whole other thing, but you can't divorce it from Godzilla. Like it's all because like it's all linked. So I'm excited to watch it. I haven't watched it yet. I know the first episode's out as of today. The episode coming as of the day this episode is publishing, our Little Cuts episode, the first episode of Monarch is on Apple TV. I got there.
I think the first two. I think the first two.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm curious to hear, because like I don't know a lot about Godzilla. I know the Godzilla movies. I think they're a little like the American Godzilla movies that we've with this MonsterVerse thing. I'm aware of them. I've seen them. They're hit or miss for me. But I love the idea of Godzilla. I love, and I really want to dive into like the film, the rich cinema history of Godzilla and just sort of explore it, because
that should be your next series instead of what we were gonna do. We should just do Godzilla movies and I can take you on a journey.
I mean, if you want to.
We already have a plan. I don't want to disrupt the plan, but okay. Anyway, sorry. Okay. But anyway.
But yeah, I am curious to hear if you watch it, what you think of it, because I just like, I've seen some people really down on it online, but like I thought it was just very breezy and fun, and it reminded me of like Indiana Jones, or like, you know, that sort of like pulpy type thing. Like I really enjoyed, and it's co-created by Matt Fraction, who is a comic writer that I really like. He is known for, he did the Hawkeye run for Marvel. He did Sex Criminals, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, I love Sex Criminals.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, okay. Well,
and he and his wife is also like a comic writer. She, Kelly Sue DeConnick, she did Bitch Planet or Bitch World. Okay. Is it Bitch World or Bitch Planet? I can't remember exactly.
I think it's but, like, Bitch Planet, but I need to, I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah, Bitch Planet. Yeah. So I mean, I think they are a fantastic power couple, and I can definitely feel his like plotting in this, because it feels like a comic book movie, a comic book series come to life as a Godzilla show. So it's fun. Okay. I highly recommend it.
Cool. I'm excited to watch it, especially because Godzilla Minus One is coming out soon.
I really want to see that so bad.
Steve and I already bought. We were gonna see it in Japan, but there was nothing with English subtitles, and there's so much like there's so many human stuff.
Yeah.
That if we saw it in Japan, it kind of.
You would lose something.
It would have been so cool to see it, but like it we would have had to see it again. So right. I think we just kind of, we took a lot of pictures, but we bought tickets to see it in the States the day it comes out. Because
I cannot wait to see it.
It's supposed to be so good. So I'm very excited.
I'm very excited for it too. Another anime?
Yeah, I watched a lot of anime in Japan. You know, very stereotypical here. A lot of really good shit has come out in, like, the animation world on Netflix as of recently. And so this next one is called Onimusha.
Okay.
Which is based on
a... Is that based on the video game?
Yes, it is. I was just going to say, okay. It's based on the video game. And it is a 8-episode series, 30-minute episode, well, 38-minute episodes, following a samurai who joins a bunch of other samurai on a mission to basically fight a guy who's become a demon. And the way he does it is by getting access to this, like, strange soul-consuming weapon and, like, a ragtag group of untrained samurai going after demons. And it's basically, like, horror, period piece Japanese horror, where they are fighting demons across the feudal Japanese landscape and trying to stop a guy who is basically, like, taking advantage of peasant populations and killing a lot of people for demonic power. And the lead character, Musashi Miyamoto, is modeled after Toshirô Mifune, who is in all of Akira Kurosawa's, like, Yojimbo and all of those, like, iconic samurai movies. His character is very much modeled after Toshirô Mifune's performances. But it's, like, it's interesting. It's mostly... And Takashi Miike directed it, by the way. Takashi Miike,
oh, shit.
Did Audition,
really?
And stuff. Yeah, Takashi Miike directed this, which is, I actually just learned that just now. So it's, like, pretty, it's not, like, super bloody, but it's pretty bloody. It's mostly 3D animation, so if you are, like, iffy on the 3D animation, it's still really, it looks really good, and it also fluctuates between, like, 3D modeling animation and 2D animation in a really cool way. In terms,
I'm
of
seeing
creating,
the trailer.
Like,
and it looks beautiful.
It's beautiful. And in terms of creating, like, different layers of, like, memory and time, it changes animation style. But I'm not usually the biggest fan of 3D animation, but this one is beautiful. Like, they the way that they use it is gorgeous. So that was the reason why I was like, when Steve was like, do you want to watch this? I'm like, maybe. But I'm very into it. And again, we're not finished with that yet, but it's really good ass-kicking samurai horror. Again, pretty emotional in terms of, like, it seems like, oh, cool, like, you know, gross, but mostly lighthearted, and then it takes a turn, and it's not so lighthearted anymore. So, that's, again, Netflix. You brought the Apple TV or Apple Plus stuff. I brought the Netflix anime.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know Netflix is shitty for various reasons, but, like, they really are doing some really cool stuff on the animation front. Like, I have to give them that. I just wish that they promoted that more, you know?
Yep.
Like, Pluto, mm-hmm. Like, Pluto, I'm going back to Pluto, like, Pluto is, like, a huge deal, and, like, Osamu Tezuka is, like, a huge deal, and while it's not his, technically, it's based on his work, which is, like, seminal in terms of Japanese animation and manga, and also just animation in general. Like, Astro Boy is important, not just in Japan. So,
well,
once again, dumping things and weird and not giving them the love that they deserve in a weird way.
Well, and I mean, I didn't even know that they were making an Onimusha anime series at all. And I am in the video game sphere, like, heavily. I loved Onimusha. I played, I think, a number of those original games. Really dug it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Had no idea this was coming out. I had no idea that it existed until just now.
I feel like Netflix so often relies on, like, the algorithm stuff to, like, resurface it to people. And I just, like, kind of hope for that because there's so much content on the streamer. And, like, it's really interesting kind of observing their marketing, like, and how they don't. I know it's the strike. It's been hard because of the strike, too. But, like, this has been a problem before. Like, they don't market
things. This isn't new.
Yeah, like, they'll choose one or two big things, and then they're constantly putting new content on that fucking platform, but they're not promoting it. But it's still, stuff is still doing well, and I think it's because they know people are just constantly coming back to it. And I think sites, and even, like, Dread Central, are, like, free marketing for them. It's the weird things I'm thinking about in terms of just, like, streaming marketing models is very weird. But, yeah, that's interesting to hear, because I was going to ask, because, like, I'm not familiar with the game, and I had no idea. And Steve knew the games and didn't know it was coming out either. So it sounds like it was kind of just, like, another thing that was kind of, like, pushed onto the platform. It's like, well, maybe you'll find it, and hopefully word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty long-running series, right?
It's a decently long-running series by Capcom, yeah, who did, you know, Resident Evil. And it was sort of like, it came out in, I think the first game came out in the late 90s, I want to say. And it was like, their idea was that it was a ninja version of Resident Evil. So it was like, there was gonna be supernatural stuff in it. But it definitely fit like the same kind of motif as like Resident Evil, but with, you know, Japanese history.
1997. Okay.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. But yeah, I played a number of those original games. I sort of lost track of it. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and it looks like they went into the 2000s, and I had no idea. But like the first, I think two, maybe the first two, I played a whole lot on. Of.
Okay. Yeah, they had a remaster came out in 2018.
Oh, okay.
That's Onimusha, and I would highly, highly recommend. Especially because Takashi Miike is the chief director.
I mean, that's wild. That's cool.
All right, and then, like, let's wrap this bitch up with Dracula as a twonk.
So,
I'm surprised you didn't talk about Alan Wake 2.
There's too much. And I didn't... I had it on here originally, and I deleted it because I have not finished it. I am, like... I'm at the point where I'm trying to wrap up things because I'm moving into the climax. And so I was like, I was going to wait. I'm going to wait until next week when I'll be done with it to talk about
it. I'm watching Steve play it. I'm not playing it, but I'm watching him play it. So that's why I was... Anyway, we'll talk about it next week.
So, boy, it just like so much has happened in the last like 2 weeks. But then because I went to New York, one of the things that I really wanted to do was finally see a show on New York. And so we went... I found out about this play on TikTok of all places because it was showing me clips of this play, and I was like, this looks really kind of fun. Oh, it's playing in New York. Oh, it'll be playing when I'm there to visit my friends. And so I had reached out to my friends and was like, hey, do you mind if we go see this? They're like, sure, let's go. So I went to go see Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors. And this is a 90-minute play that condenses Bram Stoker's novel into very succinct storyline that is very brisk, a lot of moving. It is very fast paced, and it is queer. It has a lot of gender bending. There's two actors in particular that I have to shout out: Arnie Burton, who's male presenting. He plays Mina and Van Helsing, who's a woman, among others, and he is absolutely fantastic as her. And then also Ellen Harvey, who plays Mina and Lucy's father. She plays Renfield. So there's some gender bending going on here. And then we have Dracula, who is literally abs. Like,
the videos I've seen, he is a twunk. Like, that is the twunk. Best. Like, he's so hot. Like, so funny. Like, the way that I'm curious, the way that, like, the movies objectify the women, they make him the object, it seems, from, again, the very brief videos I've seen, but...
Everyone wants to fuck Dracula, and honestly, I can't blame them. He shows up in with, like, this mesh top, and his arms are, like, up as he's, like, leaning in the doorway, arm, you know, pits out, just, like, leaning there pits out for the gaze as Harker is showing up at his castle, and then the vest comes out, and he is just standing there. He's so tall, just, he is all torso, all abs, like, I think it's just, like, his whole body is one giant ab, I don't know, but yeah, so, like, It's telling a very basic story. It's telling the story of Dracula, but is doing it so in such a funny way that is brisk. It just doesn't stop, and it is so funny. The comedic timing here is so great. And like I said, Artie Burton, who plays Mina, and Jean or Gene Van Helsing. It's just, he's a fucking star. And I have to say, Ellen Harvey, there's this really, it plays with like them because they are playing multiple characters. It's a cast of five. And aside from Dracula, they're all playing different characters. And so there's one part where Ellen Harvey is playing Dr. Westfield, the father of Lucy and Mina.
Uh-huh.
And he's like shouting off stage, and then he's like hiding his head, or she's hiding her head and playing as Renfield. And there's one part where Renfield jumps out of something, and then all of a sudden he comes around the corner on the other side that like got like huge cheers and stuff. Just fantastic little bits of that kind of stuff going on. But I have to say, if you live in New York and you want to have a good time, or you're going to New York, Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors is gay, sexy, a delight. I absolutely loved it.
Hell yeah. I've gotten emails about it, and I've seen the TikTok videos, like the promo videos.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks incredible. And I was so glad you saw it. I was like, is this like real? So I was glad that you saw it and proved to me that it was not just a figment of TikTok imagination.
Right? And the best
part. I need
part,
a proof. Sometimes
I know.
I don't believe Broadway things exist until someone actually goes to see
them. Me too. But the thing is that like the other thing I was worried about is like, what if the show is literally just like the show, the stuff they're showing on TikTok is like the best of it and it's not good, was like my other concern. But no, if anything, the TikTok is underselling how funny this show
okay.
is.
Okay. That makes me
highly
happy
recommend
to know.
It.
Okay.
Highly recommend it.
Man. Really, we're really in like a Victorian horror era renaissance right now with the Draculas and the Frankensteins.
Love it. Give yeah. me all the Victorian horror.
What?
Meow.
Do you want some Victorian horror?
Okay. Like, yeah, bitch. But yeah, that was our, that's our supersized little cuts.
Little cuts. Now that we're back. I know. Back. Yeah, I have so many things to watch now.
All right, so that's Little Cuts. Who are we chatting with on Monday, Mary Beth?
So, it's very exciting. On Monday, we're chatting with Alex Burrell and returning guest Josh Tonks about their movie The Latent Image, and we found out why Suspiria, the OG, terrified Alex growing up.
Yeah, I was not prepared. Alex is like a font of knowledge about this movie. Like, this movie
yes,
is
it's
big
so cool.
for him. And so we had a lot of discussion about it, why it terrified him, as well as just having a good conversation about Dario Argento's fantastic film.
A movie that, good. Surprisingly, we hadn't had on the show yet. So
I know.
It was really cool to talk about it, especially having Josh back and being able to talk yeah. about their incredibly queer erotic thriller, The Latent Image. You all know how much like erotic thrillers. And so this mm-hmm. is a good queer one that is out now. So check it out before our episode. Also, we're starting a new series. We're finally getting back to our series now that life is settling down a bit, Terry. And what's our new series focused on?
So Mary Beth is going to take my hand and lead me gaily along the found footage subgenre. And we're starting with a movie that we've both seen, but it's been a minute for me. And I know that it is one of Mary Beth's favorites. As above, so below.
So excited! This is the movie that got me back into found footage during the pandemic, so I'm excited to start there. And I know that Terry has seen a lot of, like, the, you know, the OGs, like, the big found footage pillars, so this is going to be kind of more of a deep cuts journey mm-hmm. into the subgenre, which will hopefully be fun for all of you who maybe aren't as into found footage or are also found footage freaks and are excited to get some love onto some lesser known titles. So don't expect anything like As Above, So Below might be one of our biggest ones we cover. So right. just get ready for some cool deep cuts because we're going on a journey of found footage.
Heck yeah.
I'm so excited. So listeners, you have heard from us. We want to hear from you. Did you watch anything or read anything that we talked about this week and have thoughts? Do you have any ideas for what found footage I should be showing Terry and maybe even myself for the first time for our found footage series? Let us know by sending us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us directly on socials. I am at mbmcandrews on Twitter and mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gaily Dreadful everywhere.
And of course, don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter at Scarred Podcast. And then also on Instagram at Scar for Life Podcast, and we're at Scar Podcast on Blue Sky.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe, especially if you want to see me watch that horrible spider movie that's going to be coming out early next year. If we can get to 200 ratings and reviews on iTunes, it'll happen. We're nowhere near, so I think I'm in the clear, but it could still happen. And now that life is returning to normal, we will be working on our Patreon again, so expect to see that coming up real soon.
Yes, very exciting. Also, quick note, if any of you want to pick up the Second Sight Ginger Snaps trilogy, we have a commentary track on that. I just got my copy since I was back and checked my mail, all my packages. Check that out if you are so inclined. And we'll have news about other things maybe like that coming up in the not-so-distant future, so stay tuned. But thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there, but most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children!